This episode is brought to you by the American Homebrewers Association, host of Virtual Big Brew, a worldwide celebration of homebrewing that's happening on Saturday, May 2nd. Be counted in this year's record-breaking Virtual Big Brew event. Pledge to homebrew this May 2nd at homebrewersassociation.org. That's homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 23rd, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, I talk with Phil Nagash, formerly of the My Life as a Foodie podcast and now of CyclingOC.com. We talk about how we've been adapting our cooking in times of isolation and how to work some of that beer that you've been brewing into your meals. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. And again, many thanks to everybody who's hanging with us during these more than challenging times. I hope that you and yours are doing well. Hang in there. Financial supporters on Monday got an early release of the next Basic Brewing video episode, along with a bonus video for premium subscribers, I guess you'd say, and a recipe. This time, it's my 15-minute Kviking Pale Ale. It's a smash beer with Breeze Pale Ale malt and Cascade hops, only boiled for 15 minutes with a 10-minute hop stand after the boil. Also dry-hopped in the fermenter with Cascade. I use the Kvike blend, and I'm really happy with the beer. The general public will see that episode next week. It's the first episode that Steve Wilkes of stevesbrewshop.com and I have shot while observing social distancing. I was in the kitchen as usual, and Steve was on Skype in his office there at the brew shop. We were still able to have some fun, and I hope that you like it. The episode coming up next will be about my brown ale, which I used in a crock pot to cook a chuck roast. Which Phil and I will talk about that coming up in the show. Let's take a quick look into the mailbag. Jacob from Chilliwack, British Columbia in Canada writes, I brewed a Pilsner with a starting gravity of 1050, fermented with Saflager W3470 dry lager yeast rehydrated in a simple water sugar solution, fermented 4 to 8 degrees Celsius, Canadian garage temps, for 3 days with no activity. Brought into the house for a day at 16°C, and the fermentation went crazy. Put it back in the garage to finish fermentation. Spent 9 days fermenting at 10 degrees Celsius. That's 50 Fahrenheit, by the way. I know that one. And then it stopped, Jacob says. Gravity at that point seemed appropriate, maybe a little sweet at 1020. So, popped the carboy in the fridge to lager. Fast forward 14 days, and Jacob checked on the beer, and it's fermenting again. The airlock is bubbling away at a frosty 1.6 degrees Celsius. Gravity reading is currently 1017. Jacob says, curious for your input. Is this normal operation for a lager? My first time making a lager not from a cooper's kit. Or have I discovered some ancient ice age yeast strain? Well, here's what I wrote back to Jacob. I said, I wonder if moving the fermenter in the fridge physically roused up the yeast and got it going again. I said, if I were you, I'd move the beer to room temperature and maybe rouse the yeast up again to make sure that it finishes the job of fermenting that beer before putting it back in the refrigerator for long-term lagering. And as a bonus, that'll give the yeast an opportunity to clean up any buttery or butterscotchy diacetyl flavors at the same time. But that's just my two cents. It seems like it's not done yet. I wonder if you can hear that thunder. We got some thunderstorms coming in. I think it's better to be safe than to be sorry on both the completed fermentation and the diacetyl off flavor fronts. Or maybe since Jacob's in British Columbia, maybe it's better to be safe than sorry. Let us know how it turns out, Jacob. Before the storms come in, let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. What do you do when you're stuck in the house doing some healthy self-isolation these days? Well, a lot of you are brewing. Some are dusting off brewing gear that you haven't used in a while, and others are just ramping up production because you've got time on your hands. Well, you can use those hands to navigate over to highgravitybrew.com and check out the Build Your Own Beer page. On that page, you can see in dramatic fashion how well-stocked the High Gravity store is. Whether you brew extract or all grain, want your grain crushed, or have your own mill yourself, the Build Your Own Beer page on highgravitybrew.com has got you covered. For example, on that page, I count 18 base malts, 16 crystal malts, 29 specialty malts, and 9 unmalted adjunct grains. And I'm not even going to count all the hops. You get the idea. Then there's the flavorings, the other adjuncts, the yeast from several manufacturers, both dry and liquid. It's all on one page, and it totals your order at the bottom of the window as you choose your stuff, and that's always visible. Pretty darn cool. And, of course, if you're ready and able to take the pain out of propane by going electric, highgravitybrew.com has their own Warthog controllers and systems, along with other manufacturers as well. From 5 gallons to 2 barrels, highgravitybrew.com has what you need. And if you use the code EBC75BB, you can save 75 bucks off your electric gear purchase. That's at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Okay, Phil and I had a lot of fun talking. Now, he'll be the first to admit that he's quite a character. He he grew up just down the road here, or at least part of his growing up was here in Northwest Arkansas, but he's now living in California. That's a big one. As we talk about in the interview, Phil has put together a free downloadable cookbook just for this occasion, and we talk about how you get that during the interview. It's really cool. Phil Nagash, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
How are you?
I'm well, and I'm hoping that you and yours are well as well.
Doing okay. Wish I could find toilet paper.
Well, you know, we had a trick when we were in grade school that if you take a piece of notebook paper and crumple it up and then open it back up and smooth it out and crumple it up and smooth it back out again, you do that enough and it gets really soft. So, you know.
Yeah. They say times are tough. The New York Times is really tough.
Especially because it's like on your iPad.
Yeah, it's like sandpaper. Yeah, really.
Now, I think I looked, what was it? I looked online in the archives, and you and I talked about kombucha the last time we talked about on this show. And I thought, man, it's been like a year since I've talked to, it's been 3 years since we talked.
3 years. Wow. Well, a lot has changed.
Yeah. And life is just zooming by way too fast. Yeah. Now, I called upon you because your food expertise, because I got to know you through your podcast, My Life, and your website, My Life as a Foodie. But you've gone from foodie to fitness nowadays.
Yeah, I actually tried to incorporate my new fitness lifestyle into my show a few times back in the day, and it just never really caught on. My audience just wasn't into it. And my numbers would drop every time I do a show that talked about eating healthy or trying to stay active. And I just finally, I gave up, and I wasn't going to try anymore. And I understood and I respected my audience for it, but I just decided to move on from the show and live my life and have a lifestyle that I really want to have now. It's not that I don't enjoy food and I enjoy cooking. I enjoy it more now than I ever have. It's just that my life is a lot different. And I want to be an active, you know, endurance athlete and eat a certain way. And that's what I'm doing now.
And you're focusing mostly on YouTube videos of biking. And you strap a GoPro on your head or your chest, and you go on these beautiful rides down these long public up here in Northwest Arkansas, what we have is we call it a greenway, but these paths. And so you have this kind of running narration about, you know, your life and what's going on and recipe ideas even and such as that. But what people, what captured me was the scenery. And, you know, if you are stuck inside on a treadmill or on an exercise bike or something like that and want to watch something, find, you know, find something just to watch to make it feel like you're in the great outdoors, your videos are great.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I started this series called Spokes about 2 or 3 years ago. And I don't have very many. I think I'm up to like 28 episodes now, but I'm really starting to gain some traction. So I'm doing them more often, and I'm trying to go to new places. I'm trying to actually go on some more off-course, some dirt rides, because there's a lot of dirt trails I've yet to explore on the show. So I'm trying to incorporate that now. But yeah, I try to keep them short because, you know, people will lose interest over time. There are a lot of videos like that on YouTube, and some are up to an hour long. I just don't have a lot to talk about in an hour. And sometimes it's a little difficult. I'm on that bike and, you know, it gets a little tough to talk and ride. So I take my time when I want to say something. I slow down. I record, you know, what I need to say. And then I just keep riding. But I appreciate you checking them out.
Yeah. And the quality is good. It's not like, you know, you hear the wind blowing all the time in the microphone, even on windy days. I don't know what your microphone setup is, but you know, there's not a lot of distracting noise. It's professionally done. So check out, search for Phil Nagash and Spokes on the YouTubes and go for a ride with Phil.
Yeah. I have a website called cyclingoc.com. You can check it all out right there.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, we're here to talk about food, and it really, you know, we've been trying to isolate as much as possible and trying not to go to the grocery store as much as possible. And in fact, I told you the other day when I enlisted your help in this, that whenever I go to the grocery store now, I kind of see it as a defeat, because it's like, oh no, you know, my plan, I ran out of food, or I ran out of this one ingredient for this dish. So I've been trying to, and I've actually been enjoying it, trying to strategize and plan before I go to the grocery store, because I used to go like every other day. Now my goal is to go like every other week. So I wanted to talk to somebody who knows food and knows cooking and knows beer as well, to kind of have a conversation about how we can, through this self-isolation and, you know, this this learning to be more self-sufficient on the cooking side, on the food side, how we can kind of get some ideas on how to keep that fresh and keep, you know, keep the ideas fresh and keep the food fresh too.
Yeah, just, you know, I'll tell you, the one thing about this that has really kind of hit me is, and I know you're like this too, James, is that I like going to the market a lot. Like, if I don't go every day, it's every other day. I like to buy things as fresh as I can. And also, I go in, sometimes I don't have a plan. I just know I want to make something, and I let the ingredients that are available tell me what I'm going to make, because it's just how I like to cook. I don't have that luxury now. And it's half the time you can't find the things you're looking for because, you know, they're gone. People have hoarded a lot of ingredients. So it's forced us to think ahead, and it's forced us to utilize things we wouldn't ordinarily buy, things like dried goods that you have to rehydrate and cook, or things that are in cans. So I'm hoping that today we can clear some of that up, give you some ideas, and hopefully get you on the road to eating well without having to put a whole lot of effort into it.
Here's a picture of me in the grocery store nowadays, because I go through my little list of recipes that I most frequently make, and I make my list of ingredients, and I put it on little post-it notes, and they're coordinated to which side of the store that, you know, which section of the store the ingredients are on. And so I come in with my homemade mask with, you know, that I made from a t-shirt and a coffee filter and a couple of rubber bands, and it doesn't fit very well. So, you know, I'm like huffing and puffing trying to go as fast, and my glasses are fogging up. And it's like, you know, I don't know if you ever saw the game show Supermarket Sweeps, but it's the from like the 90s. But that's me. I'm like going through the thing and trying to get all the ingredients as quick as possible and trying to get out there, you know, get out of there as quickly as possible. So, you know, making a list ahead of time and being, you know, organized and like I say, not forgetting ingredients and, you know, stocking, not hoarding, but, you know, stocking up on the stuff that you use the most, you know, so that you just can keep out of that store.
You're far more obsessive about that than me. I go in, I'm happy to be out of the house. So I take my time. I'll wear two masks if I have to, but I'm in there to shop and I'll spend as much time in there as I can. But I totally understand where you're going with this.
Yeah, there may be more mask wearers where you are in the Los Angeles area than there are in Northwest Arkansas. I'm not sure, but
Let me tell you something. I'm going to share a quick story for everybody here. Where I live, we have a very high volume of Chinese immigrants that live in the area. They knew back in January because I walked into a market one day and I saw that the entire section of rice and beans were gone. Before anything else disappeared, rice and beans were gone. And I thought, uh-oh, they know something we don't. For anybody who doesn't know, rice and beans, that's a complete protein. So you could literally live off of rice and beans if you had to. They knew something was going to happen. And that was kind of my first foray into we might be looking at something serious here. And that's when I started to think about, stocking up on a little few things like flour, things that might run out. And well, I was right about that. The one thing I wish I'd bought was toilet paper.
Well, here in Northwest Arkansas, the kinds of things when we went on our first big shopping trip, the things that were gone were stuff like butter, eggs, sugar, and bread. So there's a lot of French toast being made out there, I'm thinking.
Yeah, people know how to eat.
But let's talk about, first of all, what are the things that we should sort of avoid buying a whole lot of? What's the most fragile stuff and the stuff that if we buy it, we want to cook it as quickly as possible or to use it as quickly as possible? What's your priority list look like?
Well, obviously, things like fruits and vegetables. Those are things that you're going to want to eat as soon as you buy them. So when you go into the market, you know what you're going to make. You have a plan, and you buy those items. Make sure that's probably one of the first, within the first few days, things start to wilt. Even if you put them in a crisper drawer, they don't retain their freshness. So those are the things you're going to want to use as quickly as possible. Dairy is one of those things that it does last a lot longer than you might think. One of the things about milk is that, it's got an expiration date on the top. That is really kind of the last day that thing's going to be good for you, but it's going to spoil that day. And the reason why is that the minute you open any container of cream, milk, or whatever, bacteria starts eating lactose. And this process starts, and that will spoil sooner than that date on that. I don't care if it says it's got a month left, smell it, it's going to start going bad on you. Eggs is another thing. Eggs will last a lot longer than you think. Eggs, there's a three-digit code on eggs, and it basically gives you an idea of how long those eggs are going to last. The way it's numbered, I believe it's 001. If you look on the carton, 001 from January 1st to 365 for obviously December 31st, that represents the date that the eggs were packed, which can be 30 days after the egg was laid. Now you've got an additional 30 days beyond that. So that's 60 full days. As long as you keep eggs in the refrigerator, they could last God knows how long. They can last you up to 2 months. So those are things you don't have to worry about too much.
And there's a trick if you're using eggs in a recipe, crack the eggs into a separate bowl first and check them out before you just dump the egg right into a big bunch of flour. Because if you have a rotten egg and you dump it into a big bunch of flour directly, you're stuck. But if you dump it into a little bowl first and you check it out and make sure it's okay, then you can dump that from the bowl into the recipe.
Right, true. Condiments last forever, so you don't have to worry about condiments, mustard, ketchup, things like that. Really, anything in a can is going to last a very long time. And the expiration, also getting back to expiration dates that are written on cans, that's not the spoil date. That's the date when that food no longer retains its flavor and freshness, whatever that is, it's canned. But I mean, it won't give you, like botulism poisoning or anything like that, unless the can, of course, is bulged or starts to, rust, things like that. But then you're going to want to just toss that thing out. But canned goods will last an awful long time. As far as things like flour and oats, months. They'll last a long time. Cooked oats or pre-cooked oats, like the instant oats or instant grits, last like twice as long as regular flour or regular oats. So things to remember is anything you're buying in those middle aisles of the grocery store generally are going to last quite a long time. You're good for a few months. Anything you buy in the outside perimeter aisle, unless you're able to freeze it. You can freeze milk. Of course, meat you can freeze. Anything like that. You're going to lose something from anything you put in the freezer. But for the most part, it's not going to be, it's negligible, those losses.
Yeah, you can do what we've done is make like if you've got a dish with perishable things, you make like maybe twice as much, and then you
Right.
freeze, half of that, and then you've got that as a store. These are like grandma things. This is what
Yeah.
grandma used
Right.
to do.
Yeah.
But if you've got some broccoli, say, or some squash or something like that, cook a bunch of it ahead of time, chill it down. And then I've got a vacuum sealer thingy that we bought several years ago.
Oh,
I
yeah.
actually bought it when I grew hops.
Oh, nice.
So this is actually, what started out as a beer thing, but now it's, just a regular food thing. But
Yeah. Oh.
I go to the club store and I stock up on the cubed stew meat, the beef,
Right.
and then I buy like a big 5 pound package of that, and I separate it into like three portions and vacuum seal that and put it in the freezer. Same thing with like ribs, or I can cook a bunch of ribs ahead of time and then freeze that, so you can have this freezer full of stuff that you can rely on. As just as well as you can rely on the canned stuff or the dried stuff.
I like making stews and soups, and I make a lot of it, and I end up freezing it a lot of the time because it's just great. It freezes well. When it defrosts, it really hasn't lost a whole lot. In most cases, just a tiny bit of texture, but it's not really anything that anybody notices. And you've got ready-made meals in a freezer. All you have to do is defrost and eat. So yeah, you're on the right track. And I think that's something people need to start thinking about seriously, as if you're going to make some food, make a lot of it, freeze some of it. That way, if push comes to shove, there's nothing to eat. You've got something in the freezer. All you have to do is defrost it, reheat it, and you're eating a meal.
And I've discovered a couple of meals that are easy to put together with stable ingredients like fried rice, using obviously dried rice, spam. I found some teriyaki spam at the grocery. All the regular spam was gone, but they had
Yeah.
teriyaki spam. They had jalapeno spam. The spam light obviously was still there because no, why would you get
Right.
spam light?
I tell you something. Go ahead, keep going, but I've got something to say after you're done.
But using some assorted, one of those big bags of frozen assorted vegetables, in with fried rice with spam and maybe an egg or two, super easy to make, and it's all stable ingredients because it's either
Yeah.
dried or it's canned or it's frozen. Spaghetti sauce is the same way.
Yeah, you know what? I saw your post. That teriyaki spam. I don't know why anyone would make the fried rice without that. That sounded great. Teriyaki spam sounds great.
It was
But
actually pretty good.
I'm looking on the shelves of the grocery store when the hoarders came and things started disappearing. The things that were left on the shelves, I'm thinking to myself, let this be a notice to anybody who is a buyer for a supermarket. Never order that again because it was the last thing on the shelf. And for some reason, I don't know why, nobody wants like hazelnut butter bagel,
Yeah, there are a lot of embarrassed brand managers out there.
Oh my God. I mean, there's just some things that should not exist, yet they do. And obviously, no one's buying it.
There are various flavors of a Dove soap that were not popular at all. All the shelves were empty except for Dove, and pack
Yeah.
and poked under the shelf. I had to bend down to find. I found a big package of Ivory soap,
Right.
which is 99 and 44/100ths pure, by the way.
Wow.
I want to know what's in that 56% or 56/100ths. Is it ivory? Is it actual ivory that's in there? That's not right. But Dove is 1/4 moisturizing cream, I think. So
would it be embarrassing for brewers if we suddenly had a beer shortage and the only beers left were literally the outcasts of the beer world, you know?
I'm not going to say suddenly, I'm not going to mention any you know, I don't
suddenly that peanut butter raspberry stout wasn't such a good idea after all, was it?
Glitter beer. Nobody's making glitter beer anymore, right? So I can diss glitter beer. Well, we need to start talking about beer, but one thing on our list was to talk about dishes that you can cook ahead of time and then use the leftovers from that to new fresh dishes. And you had a suggestion or two about that.
Yeah, actually, I've put together an assortment of recipes that we're going to share in a little while here, not on the show, but, you know, overall, dishes basically that are literally almost like one pot dishes, which are my favorite things anyway. One pot dishes are great because you can cook it in advance. And when the family's ready to eat, just put the heat back on, it heats up and everyone's eating. It's great for leftovers. A lot of this stuff will freeze well. But a lot of the stuff is literally, they're like classic dishes that still taste great. They're not that hard to make. Literally, most of these you can make in under 30 minutes. And again, great. You know, if you want to freeze it and reheat it, it's still as good as it was the first time you made it. Vietnamese pho, which is a Vietnamese chicken noodle soup. Get a recipe for that. One of my favorite recipes of all time, which everybody loves, is a gorgonzola ale soup. With potatoes, gorgonzola cheese, and some pale ale. Beer battered fish tacos are my all-time favorite thing.
Up the truck here, Phil. You got to give us a little details on these recipes. We got to give us some guidance. I mean, we don't want to go list by list on the, you know, or ingredient by ingredient on these, but you got to give us a little bit of insight on you know, how to put these things together. I have flashbacks to your old show where you talk about, you know, building a recipe and there were sound effects in the background with it. I don't want to go that far,
right.
But
okay. All right. Well,
but paint a picture here. Make us hungry.
Here's some simple, this is just how easy this stuff is. I'm going to use the gorgonzola ale soup as a perfect example. You take a couple of Yukon gold potatoes and a few cups of chicken stock and you get it over to a simmer, like a slow rolling boil. Cook those until the potatoes are nice and tender. Take it off the heat. Now, I'm generalizing here. There's a little more to this, but this is basically the gist of it. You take it off the heat. You allow it to cool. You transfer that to a blender. You keep the top on that blender with a nice hot rag. Otherwise, you're going to get hot potato soup in your face. You puree it on high. You get it nice and smooth. You put it back in the pot. Get it back up to a simmer. You get the heat going. You crumble some gorgonzola cheese inside of that. You stir it around. You get the cheese nice and melty. You add a little bit of beer. Boom. That's the soup. It's as easy as that.
And what beer would you recommend for that one?
I would recommend a very lightly hopped ale. Now, anything way under, like, let's say 50 IBUs would be the max I'd go. The thing to remember about anything you're cooking with beer is that this isn't like, you know, the common misnomer with cooking with wine is that I'm going to use something cheap. No, you don't want to. You want to use something good, something you'd want to drink, because if it tastes cheap, it's going to taste cheap in your dish. So use a beer you like, a light lager, a pale ale that's lightly hopped, Pilsner, perfect in this dish. You're going to cook, you're going to get it up to a boil, so you're going to cook a lot of that alcohol out, but it's going to taste unctuous. It's going to have that a great malty flavor. Something with a strong malt base would be fantastic. A little bit of sweet. It brings a lot of character to the soup. The one thing you don't want to do is beer in it. Otherwise, it's going to look like, you know, muddy water, which is just not palatable. But light beers, generally, I like to cook with Belgian ales in most of my dishes. Light pale ales, Pilsners, really mostly beers that are straw-colored, unless I'm cooking something deep. Like a beef bourguignon, I'd use a dark Belgian double or a Trappist ale, you know, something with a lot of character. But again, got to really be attention to the hops. If you use something with too much hops in anything you cook, it's going to taste acrid, and it's really hard to get that taste out. So, yeah, that's something I'd really concentrate on.
It seems to me like dark beers. Like I've got this brown ale on tap, and I used it to cook a pot roast or a chuck roast the other day.
Right, that's good.
Super simple recipe. You just put your chuck roast along with some rosemary and some sage and some thyme in the crock pot with some taters and some chunked up carrots and some celery and then some onion. And then I use
Yeah.
three cups of this brown ale and just let it go all day. And
Nice.
man, oh man, was that good.
Yeah, that's great.
And I sent you a recipe. You put together a document with some recipe ideas that we're going to talk about. We'll tell people where to find it in a little bit. But I sent you a recipe of mine. I'm calling Labor Day Beer Stroganoff, where I grilled some some stew meat on the grill just to get some color and flavor, and then use that with in the Instant Pot. With mushrooms and I specify Guinness, but again, the brown ale will be excellent for that with that beef. But the mushrooms and onions sautéed in bacon, finishing that off with a little bit of half and half, and then serving that over egg noodles. And man, it's super rich and delicious, and really a good use of your beer.
Yeah, and also again, it's that particular recipe was one of those things that once you, if you haven't had it in a long time, once you taste that, you realize how much you missed food like that, especially considering, oh man, that beer, it just sounds like, especially brown ales, which, have got a nice heavy malt base. Just brings so much to beef. That's again one of those dishes that you'll make it and then realize I'm going to put this back in the rotation.
Yeah, I flash back. I was using, we talked the other day about roasting a whole chicken and then using, you can use the leftovers of the roast chicken for all kinds of things.
Yes.
And I went searching for recipes online for, leftover roasted chicken. And one of the recipes I found was a chicken teriyaki or ch tetrazzini. I'm sorry, chicken tetrazzini. And boy, I made that, and that really took me back to the 70s.
Oh, yeah,
It's
right.
just delicious and sinful and rich.
It's like tuna salad. I mean, a tuna casserole. No one makes tuna casserole anymore. But does it get much more simple than tuna casserole?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things. We go through phases where it's not okay to eat pasta anymore, or it's not okay to eat this or eat that, or what. And so, I think with moderation. Obviously,
Right.
if you're drinking a lot of beer and you're cooking with a lot of beer, moderation is the key. It's what we try to preach here, and we try to practice as well. But
Right.
there was a meme on the internet that said, after this isolation, and the quarantining, people are either going to come out as really good cooks or alcoholics, and that's not.
Right.
And there's probably a lot of truth. There's a whole lot of drinking going on the social medias, people saying, oh, it's, Zoom happy hour and things like that. Slow down, people. Everybody take it easy.
I wanted to hit on this later as we talked, but I'll go ahead and hit on it now. I think it's really important that people think about this right now, and think about it right now as you're listening to the show. Our mental health is going to get affected here, and I think exactly as what you said is exactly what I wanted to say. I'm seeing it too. People are day drinking; they're taking it too far. It's okay to enjoy yourself, but I think people are thinking, well, they're on vacation, and they're going to treat it like this, and it's going to affect us. And I think that. And I didn't talk about this much on my show. In fact, I haven't talked about it much at all publicly, but I went through a phase after Katrina's death, where I realized I needed some therapy. So I went and I talked to a couple of therapists, and one of the things they told me was that people think that the beer's the answer for them or alcohol's the answer. If they're feeling down and they might have a drink, it might make them feel better. The actual opposite is true. It's like having anxiety and saying, I think I'll snort a line of coke. It'll make me feel better. It does the wrong thing to you. And if we go overboard and we do this too much, we're going to be needing a different kind of help when this is all over. So yeah, it is important. Keep your head about you. This is no different than any other time in our lives. This is not going to last forever. We're going to be out of the woods before you know it, and we'll be back to normal. We just don't want a whole new set of problems that we have to hold on to. Well, I'm sorry to bring the show down, James.
No, well, it's well said, and I appreciate your sharing that. That personal advice, and I guess we should say that Katrina was your lovely first wife, and you lost her a few years ago. And you have done a great job of taking control of your life and becoming more healthy, and really, are a great example of someone who, could have gone down the chute. not saying anything about your personality specifically, but in that situation, there is a lot of stress, and there, could be a chance that, isolation could take you to a very bad place. So good for you for taking control.
Now, look, if you love yourself enough, you'll take care of yourself. It's as simple as that. I don't think any of us would want to say that we don't love ourselves. So, it's all you have to do. Just look in the mirror and ask yourself, are you happy with who you are? If the answer is yes, then keep going. But if deep down the answer is not yes, then do the work. It's not that hard. It really isn't.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Let's.
My God, I'm such a downer. I was so happy on my show. I come on your show. I bring the whole thing down. I'm so sorry, everybody.
Phil's having the feels.
Yeah. What the hell, man? What happened to me?
It's just me. I'm just little Debbie Downer here. That's Now we're pulling out of it. We're pulling out of it.
Life is a depressed sociopath.
Let's talk about 30-minute cassoulet.
Yeah, now we're talking. Hey, listen. So let's not get too far off track here. In all of this, you talked about freshness, right? One of the things that people end up buying if they're going to cook real food at home, one of the things they end up buying and then not using a lot of and it goes bad because it's fresh are herbs. Mm. If you've got a little bit of space, even on in your kitchen window, grow your own herb garden. It doesn't take a lot of water. It doesn't take a lot of time. Just go to Home Depot or your nursery and just buy a few plants, some parsley, oregano, thyme, rosemary, sage, whatever you like to use. Plant it in a little planter, keep it watered, keep it working, get some sun, and you'll have fresh herbs all year for the most part, and you'll be able to use what you need, and you'll always have it at your disposal. That is, I'll tell you, herbs, as you well know, is one of those things that can completely change the complexity of a dish, an herb or a spice.
Yeah.
Those are great items to have around, always.
And there are herbs like basil that will, we usually have like a basil shrub by the end of the summer because it's just huge. It just gets out of control.
It gets messy. Then you got a lot of pesto on your hands.
Yeah, exactly, which you can also freeze, by the way.
True. That's right. You can.
My stepmother got us a couple of Christmases ago, got us one of these aero garden things with the grow light and the timer and the pump, and you put the, Miracle-Gro stuff in the thing. And we've got a bunch of lettuce in the laundry room now in the little garden. So
that's great.
There's some fun fun little solutions that I think that it's going to change the way that I cook and that I shop and that I think about food, because you get into these habits where it's wasteful. Really, for me, I have to drive, 10 or 15 minutes to get to, the grocery store that I go to. Mm-hmm. And so it's wasteful. It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of fuel. It's a waste of energy to be doing that every other day. So if I can think like my mom used to back in the 70s, and, she'd just go to Safeway like once a week or once every, week and a half or something like that. But with strategic planning, I feel like we can streamline our lives so that we come out of this, even better.
Yeah, I think it's going to change us for the good, because I think if you start doing things like meal planning, you plan out the things you want to make, and then you can go so far as what James is doing, which is, outlining where those items are so you don't have to make multiple trips throughout the market. You could pretty much set a path as to what you're going to make on what day, how long things are going to last in the refrigerator, so you use those up quickly. And then start, thinking about items or making things that you can freeze if there are leftovers, because ultimately there are going to be leftovers. And you can really stretch the dollar too. I mean, you could save a lot more money this way because you're not constantly throwing food, making things that actually do freeze well.
Yeah. Yeah. You can, you know, it's like I say, it's grandma's way of thinking, this depression era thinking.
Right.
You use every part of the chicken, you know, and like I said, you know, we can, when you're making, you know, like we've both got Instant Pots, you know, when you're cooking a whole chicken, say, in your Instant Pot for your pho, you know, then you probably are going to have some spare broth left over. So then you can freeze that and use that in different recipes later on. So, you know, it's this whole rewiring your brain, you know, taking stale bread. You know, you mentioned in one of our conversations to making bread, and you can make bread with beer, by the way. But then you can take stale bread and turn it into other things as well.
Yeah. In fact, there's a recipe that I have for a tomato bread salad, which is it's a Spanish dish. And it's absolutely delicious. And you could use stale bread in this salad because the bread actually starts absorbing some of the vinaigrette that you make. And it's completely, I made it for a vegan friend of mine who absolutely loved it. So it's a healthy dish. You know, if you're not worried about eating some bread, it's there's not a lot in it. But it's another one of those dishes where you can reuse something that's going bad on you.
Of course, if you're brewing beer, you can't be worried too much about bread, right?
Yeah, that's true. I forgot the audience I'm talking to here.
Again, it's all about moderation, you know.
Yeah, God bless all you.
Now, it's let's think about beer and make a list of like your favorite beers to cook with and your favorite beers to pair with. I mean, it seems like to me that there are beers that are delicious to go with dishes that aren't necessarily the greatest to go in the dish.
Yeah. And I think that's where you really, where it can really shine. Even if you don't use beer in a dish, because there's some dishes, and especially some of the recipes I share here that don't call for beer at all because beer adds nothing to it. You don't have to put beer in everything, you know, but if it calls for it, if it's something that will enhance the dish, certainly use it. I like pairing lighter fare dishes with lighter fared beers, darker dishes with darker beers. And the reason for that is I don't want, and there are going to be people out there that will disagree with this. I don't want the beer to compete with the dish. Mm. I want the beer to, you know, I want to eat. I want to drink along with what I'm eating. Like I would drink a red wine with a steak, right? But why? Because it just seems to match. You know, those flavors, the bold, even some tannic heavy wines would go well with something deep and dark. Lighter things like fish, I would want to go to a white wine. Then I'd go to like a golden ale or a light triple, things like that. Quadruples are some of my most favorite things to pair with dishes. Your beef stroganoff, I would certainly have a quadruple with that, with that dish, you know? So I always think about what I'm eating and in pairing it, what are the things that would elevate that dish? So I think that that's, you know, if you think along those lines, you look at the dish, you know what it tastes like, right? Start thinking about what beer that I like, you know, would go well with this. For my money, IPA pairs with just about anything. Mm-hmm. And I know it's, I don't know because I've been out of the loop for a while. I don't know if people are tired of IPAs. But I'll never get tired of that, especially if it's done right. Something that's got a nice heavy malt base. And even if the IBUs are in the 90s, it still doesn't matter because the beer's got so much body that there's a great marriage there. IPAs pair so well with so many things.
Now, the great pairing that often comes up with IPAs is carrot cake. And I think it would work well with tart beers as well because you've got carrot cake, which is this rich cake with this sour cream icing that, you know, you eat it and it's just like, oh, it's very heavy and it weighs on your tongue. And what you want after that is something to kind of be a cleanser and to scrape off that.
Wash your palate. Yeah.
So a nice,
I wouldn't have thought of that, but you know what? You're absolutely right.
A super bitter IPA or a nice tart beer, you know, which, you know, some people by themselves, you know, that would go, they don't like those beers. Like, for example, A few years ago, Steve Wilkes gave a beer pairing dinner, and he did one of the courses was grilled bratwurst. You know, and this is, you know, heavy, greasy food. And my wife, Susan, generally doesn't like sour beers, but he served La Folie from New Belgium with that. And she liked it because you eat, you know, eat some of that greasy, heavy meat. And then you take a sip of that nice, tart, substantial beer that, you know, by itself, she didn't like, but paired with that food, you know, it just elevated everything to another level.
But La Folie brings the funk, man. There's lactobacillus up the in that beer.
I'm going to have to bring out the sound effects.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry.
It's okay.
And Phil is back.
Just a peek into Phil's personality here. We're learning a lot about you in this episode, Phil.
Yeah. Maybe too much.
Oh, well, any final thoughts, you know, as we talk about, you know, just, you know, isolating with food and beer and, you know, how just your philosophy, Phil, wrap it all up.
Well, this goes against the grain of everything that I've stood for as a cook, as a home cook. Is that, you know, we've got to buy canned foods sometimes because you're left with what's left, right? And I think if you're going to hunker down and you need things to last, you're going to have to buy some things in cans. Canned foods are okay if that's what you have. One of the things I want to stress to everybody is not to buy canned vegetables, because canned vegetables, that's just a crime against nature. That's not something... You know, I'd rather you throw a can of vegetables at my crotch than make me eat it. It's just horrible. But, you know, canned beans are good. In fact, one of my recipes called for canned beans if you can't make them yourself. But Instapot, as James mentioned, if you don't own one, they're not that expensive now. It is one of those things, even if you call yourself a gourmet chef, it will expedite the process of some menial tasks in your kitchen so much, you'll wonder how you lived without it. Everybody uses pressure cookers. It's basically, it has a pressure cooker function. You could use it for that if that's all you used it for. But James, some of the stuff that you do with this Instapot, oh my God, I mean, you cook in it. I have yet to scratch the surface of this thing.
Yeah, we use it like two or three times a week. And in fact, this evening, you know, we're going to go from dried pinto beans in the bag to pinto beans with, you know, some ham in there and some onion and some jalapeno and such as that in like an hour and a half. You know, you don't have to think ahead to soak the beans. You can make, you know, I make split pea soup in like less than an hour.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. And again, from stable ingredients that you can either keep in the cupboard, like onions, you know, they'll go bad, you know, after a while. But if you keep them in the dark, you keep them cool, they're, you know, they'll keep for a while. But, you know, ham, you can freeze the beans or the peas, you know, are dry. Right. So, you know, it's a super easy recipe that I can, you know, if I've been slacking off and haven't thought about, you know, cooking all day, and then it's like, oh, well, we can have some beans. So,
yeah, no, exactly. No, beans are great, especially if you buy a whole pound of beans, soak them and cook them in that pressure cooker. You'll have beans for a while and a lot more cost effective than buying them in the cans. Plus, they taste better.
Yeah. And you don't even have to soak them. You can just wash them and stick them in that in the pressure cooker. So,
right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Phil, you've put together a document.
Yes.
And where can we find it with all these recipes, including the full recipe of my Labor Day beer stroganoff? Where can they find this document?
Yes. Yeah, so it's called A Pandemic Cookbook, How to Eat Your Way Through an Unmitigated Disaster. And yeah, the title, I know, I wasn't too sure. You should have heard the ones I threw out.
that's a little grander than I thought.
Yeah, no, the one I threw out, cooking from cans, these are ideas based on actual classic cookbooks. I had one called Cooking from Cans, How I Lost the Joy of Cooking. There's another one I had. Forgive me, Julia Child, Massacring the Art of French Cooking.
Yeah,
And this one was a little dark. The Cabin Fever Cookbook, 120 Easy Meals Before You Swallow a Bottle of Sleeping Pills. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to focus group these. Zoom focus group.
I went with this one. Yeah, I thought it was a little nicer. So you can pick it up free, and this is something I'm going to be working on this, so I'm going to add to it as we go. But it's up now. You can check it out. You can download it. Go to mylifeasafoodie.com/cookbook. It's available in both PDF and EPUB format. You could read it on your tablet, your phone. I've formatted it so you can print it. And the way I've done it, it's set up if you have a horizontal view on your reader on your phone, put it in horizontal view, and there's two facing pages. On the left, you'll see a little intro with the ingredients. On the right, simple cooking instructions. None of the stuff in here requires you to have a master's degree in culinary school or anything like that. All simple stuff. You can cook. Anybody can cook this stuff. I could teach a monkey to cook half these things.
I'll wait for that video.
Yeah. I get to work on that.
All right, Phil. This has been it's been a lot of fun. I hope it's not another 3 years before we talk again.
No, I know. I'm sorry if I went a little off track. I hope I was able to provide at least a little insight. You really roll the dice bringing me on this show.
Thanks, Phil.
I give you credit. Yeah, thank you.
Well, thanks again to Phil. Again, you can find the free downloadable cookbook, No Strings Attached, at mylifeasafoodie.com/cookbook. mylifeasafoodie.com/cookbook. And I'll tweet the link, and I'll also put it into the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. Check out cyclingoc.com for Phil's biking videos, and put them on your exercise bike or treadmill while you're stationary and exercising. Enjoy that beautiful California weather and scenery. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all. Until next time. Till then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time. In the meantime, stay well. And stay tuned. So long, everybody.